Say that again. The moment you accept the...
The moment you accept the world as a recording studio, you have accepted the environment as an art form. This is only possible when you have another electronic environment of information that goes totally around the globe itself, enclosing the globe, as it were, in a net of electric information that turns the globe, the habitat, what had previously been the human environment, now becomes the content of an electric man-made environment. And we then suddenly become tremendously self-conscious of all sounds and effects of that environment as if it were a work of art. This is the moment of pop art. It's one thing to put a tomato can in the Guggenheim as a stunt, but as an artistic gesture, it is really a gesture. It's really a way of saying that the environment of man has now become an art form.
Okay.
We think of humor as a mark of sanity for a good reason. In fun and play, we recover the integral person who in the workaday world or in professional life...
No, is this?
Oh, yes, I meant... All right, fine, excuse me, yes.
Or in professional life can use only a small sector of his being.
Fine.
When a person is using all his faculties at once, he's playing, he's at leisure. The artist never works, although he is often intensely involved in his creative activity. He's always at leisure because he's using all his faculties. And in the same way, games, like hobbies, are popular art, collective, social reactions to the main drive or action in any culture. Games, like institutions, are extensions of social man and of the body politic, as technologies are extensions of the animal organism. Both games and technologies are counter-irritants, or ways of adjusting to the stress of specialized actions that occur in any social group. As extensions of the popular response to the workaday stress, games become faithful models of a culture. They incorporate both the action and the reaction of whole populations in a single dynamic image. It would be unthinkable, for example, to imagine ourselves paying attention to games from another culture, cricket, for example. In the same way, until you have an audience participating in the action of the game, there isn't any game. It's merely a dress rehearsal until there is an actual audience participant. In other words, games require audience as actors, not just as spectators. The wide appeal of games of recent times, the popular sports of baseball and football and ice hockey, seen as outer models of inner psychological life, become understandable. As models, they are collective rather than private dramatizations of inner life. You couldn't really have a game that was a merely private image or a private model of action. It does require this corporate response, and it does require this kind of involvement in the total life of a culture in order for it to be a game at all.
What does solitaire mean?
I suppose a little bit like golf, which means pursuing your own immediate problems and immediate moves. But it isn't a game I've ever played myself, but it is, by definition, it is an extreme form of game which excludes as much as possible of the corporate life. I suppose, however, it dramatizes the needs of the individual to adjust to a limited set of components, cards, plays. It is a way of harassed individuals confronting the rather limited conditions of their existence. If you see someone playing solitaire in a movie or on a stage, you know that there is a kind of stressful situation. It records, it reflects some sort of inner stress, almost to a degree of comedy. Art and games enable us to stand aside from the pressures of routine and convention, observing and questioning. Games as popular art forms offer to all an immediate means of participation in the full life of a society such as no single role or job can offer to any man. You know, we have phrases like the newspaper game. And the newspaper as game, or the business game, is a way of exploring the environment, of finding out what it's made of, testing it, trying it on, putting it on. In fact, I suppose one could say that games are really a way of putting on one's fellow man. Rocket Richard, the famous Canadian hockey player, used to complain about the acoustics of the Maple Leaf Stadium in Toronto, explaining that it interfered altogether with his game as compared with the Forum, Montreal. He felt that the puck off his stick rode on the roar of the crowd when he was in a good acoustic situation. And this is, I suppose, an extreme example of the way in which audience participation makes a game possible. Sport as a popular form is not just self-expression, but is deeply and necessarily a means of interplay within an entire culture. Seen as live models of complex social situations, games may lack moral earnestness. Perhaps there is a desperate need for games in a highly specialized industrial culture, since they are the only form of art accessible to many minds. Real interplay is reduced to nothing in a specialist world of delegated tasks and fragmented skills and jobs. The games create countervailing force. They prevent us from bogging down into too grim earnest. Men without art and men without popular arts of games tend toward the anthill, the world of automatism. Art, like games, is a translator of experience, a way of probing the life around us. What we have already felt or seen in one situation, we are suddenly given in a new kind of material in the form of games. Games likewise shift familiar experience into new forms, giving the bleak and the blear side of things sudden luminosity. To flip back a moment to the newspaper game, it has often been noticed and often caused a certain amount of puzzlement why real news has to be bad news. Good news just wouldn't do to keep a newspaper alive. After all, advertising is all good news. And real news, on the other hand, has to have a catastrophic dimension. I think perhaps the reason for this is that in the catastrophe or in the disaster, in the bad news, you have the encounter of different kinds of forms. You have the revelation of forms, the life of forms, by contrast and encounter. In other words, the exploratory, the discovery aspect of art and game comes alive in this encounter of situations which we associate with bad news and disasters. Games then are contrived and controlled situations, extensions of group awareness that permit a respite from customary patterns. They're a kind of talking to itself on the part of a society as a whole. Talking to oneself is a recognized form of play that is indispensable to any growth of self-confidence. The British and Americans have enjoyed during recent times an enormous self-confidence born of the playful spirit of fun and games. When they sense the absence of this spirit in their rivals, it causes embarrassment. To take mere worldly things in dead earnest betokens a defective awareness that is pitiable. that games are extensions not of our private, but of our social selves, and that they are media of communication should now be plain. If finally we ask, are games mass media? The answer has to be yes. Games are situations contrived to permit simultaneous participation of many people in some significant pattern of their own corporate lives, patterns that may remain distant and inaccessible to most people except as they encounter them in games. This can be related also to that phrase that I came up with a while back. That the medium is the massage. This should appear especially obvious in matter of games. The massage or the rough handling of people by people and the banging of one situation into another situation is deliberately contrived, is deliberately explained, as it were, in our social mass communication form of games. The medium is the massage refers to the fact that any new medium creates an environment which really deals rather roughly with old environments and with people in the old environments. And games are subject to a good many vicissitudes and changes. As baseball has tended to fade with TV, so has boxing. Boxing is altogether too abrupt, too violent, too sudden, too harsh an encounter, a massage, for this medium, as compared with, for example, with All In Wrestling, where the massage is altogether more congenial to the medium of TV. In fact, All In Wrestling is mainly a product of TV and is showmanship and showbiz all the way. Boxing, by comparison, is too harsh, too hot, too sudden. Have not the New York police issued instructions in recent years to the population that if individually they should be in trouble, they should not ask for help. They should shout, fire. This is a very extraordinary suggestion, which may have helped to explain the difference between a hot game like boxing and a cool game like wrestling. The involvement in wrestling is much greater than in boxing. In boxing, the performers are much more detached. And in fact, they're told to break clean in the clinches. They're invited to stay as separate as possible. Whereas in wrestling, they're expected to be as involved as possible. Wrestling has come back big with TV. Boxing has declined drastically with TV. People don't respond to cries for help because they already feel involved. They don't want to get involved one little bit more than they already are in their private lives. On the other hand, fire is like boxing. It suggests merely, let's rush in and put out this fire and then beat it. It doesn't suggest involvement, but merely in a sudden, swift encounter. But cries for help are terrifying because they suggest that we're going to get even further involved in some situation of which we have no idea. And so the mystery, I think, about why people have tended to stand by and watch innocent people get clobbered in our world since TV may be understandable in these terms.
In fun and play, we are, you know.
We think of humor as a mark of sanity for a good reason. In fun and play, we recover the integral person who in the workaday world or in professional life can use only a small sector of his being. Paralyzing in sport.
The mere idea
of a magazine specializing in sport is a rather startling when you think of it. It does suggest that the world of games has been upgraded greatly in our new electric world, and that the participation in games is taking on new forms. As, for example, in baseball, on TV, it's plain that the viewer participates far more in the mysteries, the processes of baseball, the signals used, the strategies used between batters, catchers, pitchers, and base coaches and such. Also, with the coming of instant playback, you have a tremendous means of involvement in this process of games, which is very congenial to the TV viewer. The world of process and the art and mystery of games as a complex process is something that TV has fostered and would seem to account for the popularity of a thing like Sports Illustrated, which offers unlimited expression for this very matter of artistic interest in the game as a process.
Take the whole statement on that, boss.
One of the paradoxical reversals of democracy under conditions of electric technology brings the individual member of society to exactly the same condition formerly confronting royalty in older societies. The work of royalty was, and to a large degree is, not the preparing for any particular job in life, but simply growing up. Growing up meaning the use of all faculties, learning all things, and under electric conditions, this has become increasingly the destiny of ordinary individuals. They have to simply know everything that's going on in their world. They have to grow up. They're using all their faculties at once. Instead of specializing, using just a few of their faculties to acquire a particular skill, they have to use all their faculties and simply to know and to grow. This is therefore a far harder work than the old idea of job preparation, but far more exciting because far more satisfying to an integral being. The population of the world can be comfortably fed and housed in West Germany or Montana.
What's that?
The entire population can be comfortably fed and housed, lots of space, in West Germany or in Montana. Now, with the new means of new resources, scientific resources for getting yield out of things, therefore what we call crowding and population explosion and so on is mainly a result of trying to fit a new situation inside an old situation. It's again this media clash. So again, population explosion has not got very much to do with the increasing number of people. It has very much to do with the fact that at high speeds of information, there's no space between people anymore. All space has been removed between people. They're suddenly crammed together like a black hole of Calcutta. This having very little to do with numbers, very much to do with speed. And same with the mass media. Mass media are not constituted by their size, but by the speed with which they operate and the degree to which they involve their audiences. The mass is a function of speed.
Mass means all at once.
No, it means all at once. And you know anything that moves at the speed of a light is supposed to, by in terms of modern physics, to acquire infinite mass.
Also, if you take the definition or the thought I have when you say mass, I think of a body of something.
Yeah.
So this is a body of opinion all at once, a body of reaction all at once.
But if a small particle could acquire infinite mass at speed of light, this helps to explain many of our problems in the modern world. Trivial news events can acquire huge and portentous proportions at electric speeds. And we are compelled to participate in the wars around the world simply because of speed of information movement.
You said at one point elections were obsolete in that NBC show. Can you expand on that at all?
Well, nose counting, fragmentation of opinion, nose counting, goes very much along with typographic technology. A typographic technology creates a public made up of discrete, separate individuals, each with a point of view. At electric speeds, people become so tightly involved in each other and that they lose all point of view, become simply creatures of a mood or a particular state of mind. It's like switching from the world of, say, separate pictures, cartoons, into a world of simple block color, which is a world of profound involvement and single mood.
Well, would you in any way say that elections might take the form of these NBC or CBS, what do they call that program on where they have these testing or opinion people send in? They've been having...
National Safety...
No, they have, a virus playback, they call it.
Playback.
I haven't seen these.
Yeah.
I'd be interested.
And it's where they send out questions, three or four questions on cards, on computer cards. They get back their answers from all over the country.
Well, I suggest that instead of sending out questions, that they first brief audiences on top problems and then invite not their response by way of yes, no, or maybe, but solutions. Practical solutions to cancer research, to any kind of scientific problem, whatever. But the nose counting is based on fragmentation, only became possible with newspapers and typography. Under electric conditions, nose counting becomes meaningless.
Do you have any relation of this to research and advertising? I find that it is a destructive force. That they measure what people remember about something, but that has nothing to do with what they feel about something.
No.
And I think what they feel about a product is more important than what they remember.
I'm not suggesting for one moment that any of these developments are necessarily good. They obviously fraught, as they used to say, with terrible possibilities in the way of destruction and annihilation. Naturally, as we acquire new powers... and much greater powers, we also acquire more threatening means of dealing with ourselves and others. It's like the inner world of judging people. You can really do people in but good in your heart by judging them this way or that way. We're increasingly acquiring this power as an outer fact. We can deal with ourselves and with our world almost in the same instant and total way that we can deal with our inner mental life and movements of judgment. It's about this moment that people suddenly panic at the thought of capital punishment. As they become more involved in each other, they become terrified at the idea of capital punishment because they no longer feel capable of assigning discrete, separate, little bits of blame to anybody anymore. They feel that I'm just as guilty of this for this about this situation as those people who are being punished for it. And this creates terrible confusion. This as we become more involved and more feel more involved in these events, we lose the ability to make decisions, and in the sciences, in fact, the uncertainty principle has come into play in physics as the physicist becomes more aware of the structure and behavior of particles. He is more and more aware about the uncertainty of their behavior and about the means by which it can be influenced by the scientist himself. And so, in a paradox, the electric world is, as the environment itself becomes one of information, we become less and less certain about what to do with it. We're moving steadily in the direction. Well, so once you've externalized your nervous system, you're certainly beginning to move in the direction of externalizing the activity of consciousness. Consciousness isn't a content, it's an activity, it's a process.
So that was Marshall McLuhan, 1966-67, in Tony Schwartz's studio in New York City. Excellent insights into the pattern of art and games and espionage and crime and capital punishment. Well worth memorizing. Use it on your friends.